My name's Travis Sansom. Where this session, we're going through NoSQL and in specific a service we call Azure Document DB. First check, who came because of NoSQL? Okay, who came for Document DB? Oh, that's good. Okay, so people do know what it is. Okay, that's good. I am going to go through, so I'm going to mix up this session a bit. We're going to do some coding. There's going to be some kind of level 100, 200 stuff as well for anyone in the audience who doesn't know what it is. I will tell you I am first. My name is Travis Sansom. I work for Microsoft. I'm what we call a data platform TSP, technical solution professional. We love acronyms, if you haven't realized, throughout the conference. My role inside Microsoft is I have a lot of technical discussions, a lot of demos, all of that around anything data related inside of Microsoft. So Document DB is definitely one of my workloads. My primary workloads is actually SQL. But other workloads like machine learning, real-time analytics, Power BI is my most user-friendly product that I get to show. Everything else gets very ugly very fast. So that's me. If you want to know, I've been with Microsoft for about a year and a half, so I'm actually in their graduate program at the moment. I went to UNSW in New South Wales, if you want to know more, but that's irrelevant. So Document DB, the way we usually start a Document DB presentation is talking about how we develop apps nowadays, and you guys would probably all be across this. But when we talk about developing apps nowadays with Document DB, we talk about the fact that this term we call polyglot persistence. We're not really saying that NoSQL by no means is a replacement for SQL. It's not a replacement for SQL. It's about them coexisting inside an application. We will say that, your apps today, so unpredictable rapid growth and consumption, that's where we're seeing Document DB used a lot. Things like the, I didn't change it on the slide, but that's meant to say instant response times. So very fast instant response times. Document DB, like other NoSQL, is built with JSON first, which means you don't have to have that intermediate layer of doing the data conversion to the business object. And developed iteratively. So the fundamental underpinning of NoSQL is the fact that we can flexibly change these models over time, and you'll see that inside the presentation. An overview of what Document DB is. So Document DB, it's a PaaS-based service, so a platform as a service. That means that you can instantly spin it up. You don't have to worry about any of the infrastructure in terms of scaling out. We handle all of that for you. Other nice things as well. So it was designed for the cloud. It's actually one of the more interesting projects. So the team who built the project, they wanted to build it, but they weren't. They didn't get enough funding to actually do it for on-premise first. So they made it for the cloud first, and that's why you don't see an on-prem solution for Document DB today. It was truly designed to be a cloud-first service, and it does underpin a lot of the apps actually inside of Microsoft. Another one. So like I said before, so rich query and transaction over JSON data. So you've got pretty much, I'm not going to say full SQL support, but you've got a lot of the SQL footprint. I know a couple of months ago they added order by and everyone was really, really happy, including me. You've got the ability to do JavaScript stored procedures as well, JavaScript stored procedures and triggers as well, so you can put them into your NoSQL environment as well, which is pretty powerful. Fast, predictable performance, like you would expect. Tunable consistency, we're going to go through that a bit. So with Document DB, you've got the choice of what you want to make your consistency. So I'll often talk about if you're making a recommendation system, then some of the time for recommendations, if a user gets a recommendation that's a bit old, it's probably not going to matter most of the time, depending on how often you're doing your recommendations. That's one, so you may fine-tune your consistency there. Elastic scale, rapid development. Enterprise grade, like always. It's fully REST as well, so all the endpoints are REST endpoints. There are SDKs though, and I'm going to show you them. As to where it's being used, I didn't want to put up a this is where the customers are using it. So it's some cool places where it is being used. So those are from Twitter. Those are two recent ones. So there's apparently, I haven't played it yet, but apparently there's a game that they made for The Walking Dead, which is a TV series called No Man's Land, and DocumentDB does actually underpin that as a service. Also, you'll see there as well another game which we're showing a lot at the moment. Forgotten how much I did on opening weekend, but Halo 5, underpinning that is DocumentDB in terms of the user profiles and all of that. You can kind of picture with both these games. No Man's Land is a top game on iOS, so lots and lots of user, lots of frequent transactions. Halo 5, equally the same. The other interesting ones are actually, there are some services inside of Azure that you'll look at and you kind of think, they look interesting. But the thing is, so with DocumentDB, it is actually one of the services that underpins a lot of the other services. So there's this service and there's another service called Azure Batch. If you ever hear about it, Azure Batch is used by a lot of other services and sitting inside Azure. DocumentDB is the same. So it's used by the MSN group. Most infamous example was the food and recipes app, which unfortunately we're getting rid of, but it was built with DocumentDB. A better example though is if you are using OneNote today, you are probably using DocumentDB behind the scenes because OneNote is built on DocumentDB. So that's a big service for us. The other one is if you've seen with machine learning, we have a nice gallery where you have templated experiments and all of that. That's built on DocumentDB as well. So true and through, Microsoft is using this service ourselves and it is tried and tested. Cool. So that's going to end the demo content, the slide content for now. We're going to swap across to my local machine. And if we get that right, oh, how good is that, the fade? Cool. So we're going to go through a bit of a demo. I'm going to show you the portal. I'm going to show you how to put some data into there. I'm going to show you how to interact with it. I thought one of the awesome things, though, when I went to it, DocumentDB is about the only service where I've seen this. So if you want to schedule a one-on-one with the engineering team from the public, you can do that today with DocumentDB. I would challenge to, which I haven't seen any other product team do that, so do go and try that if you want. They would love to speak to you. If we go to the dashboard, so this is my dashboard. This is the one thing to point out with DocumentDB, all the management is done from the new portal, not the old portal. So you'll notice we have two portals. We have one which looks like manage.windowsazure.com, and then we have the portal.azure.com. Use the portal.azure.com for managing DocumentDB. When you go new on the left-hand side, it'll pop out. It's under data and storage. Oh, sorry. Yeah, no, that's fine. Could pick up. Is that fine? Is that better? Keep going? Oh, keep going. Okay. That better? Okay, cool. Okay, so I went new, data and storage, and then into there. It's down here, Azure DocumentDB. The nice thing I like to point out for DocumentDB that if you choose location, it is in Australia East and the Southeast data centers. So it is here locally for you to use. I've already got one created, of course. So if you saw, they put this fancy pinning stuff on the left-hand side recently. This is my DocumentDB account. Now, when you go into the account, you can see a couple of things. So you see the total requests, the average requests. What you'll see down here is the events that have hit it, and also the databases that you have there. So inside a DocumentDB account, you can have multiple databases. Inside each one of these databases, there's a bit of a schema. So inside a database, you have two things. You have your database down to your collections. Inside a database, you'd have multiple collections. A common misnomer is that people think of them as tables. They're not tables. Don't try and map it to SQL. So they're not tables. You can't cross query them today. I should say there is a feedback suggestion center as well. So if that's something you want, throw it up there and they will either do it or prioritize it. So that's that. What we will do, so I'm going to show you how you move data into DocumentDB. There are a couple of ways. The DocumentDB team have been really good and they've made this data importer. And it's called the DocumentDB data migration tool. In terms of source, you'll see here that it supports a lot of different sources. So if you're using any other NoSQL frameworks at the moment, so most prevalent in industry at the moment is MongoDB, you can use them. Also, if you want to do something, if you want to pull data from SQL, which I'll show you in a minute, you can do that as well. So if I go here to JSON files, I'll go add files. I'll add this one. I'll say next. At this point, you need to get your connection string. Finding connection strings for Azure services is really easy now because they put this little button here. You click that. Oh, you don't click that one. And then once you click that key, then it'll pop out. If we grab this one, paste that in, we're going to add a new collection. Add. You can set a partition key as well. I'm not going to do that. If I've remembered the field name or else it's going to complain. You can do an error log as well, but we won't do that. What happened? Targeting. Oh, okay. What you want the portal won't do for you is they won't put on the database. So with the tool, you have to specify the database. Fingers crossed. There you go. And then that's 30 files going across. If you want to see what the file actually looks like underneath for that one, that was this Ignite data. Ignite data concerts. Right click. Edit with Notepad++. That's what the file looked underneath. So it's just a list of JSON documents that I'm importing into the service. Once they've gone ahead and imported, I can go ahead and have a look at them. So you'll notice here that when I go, so if it showed up automatically here, when I navigate in, you'll see the new collection has been created. So our concerts selection, our concerts collection, and inside the concerts collection, I'll show you this. So you've got a couple of options. You've got up the top, you've got a document explorer, and that's for looking at your documents that I just uploaded. So those are my 30 documents I just uploaded. There's also the query explorer where you can explore via SQL queries, and then there's a script explorer as well. So if I go to the document explorer, it'll default to Concert Watcher, default to concerts because the only one, and then you can see them there sitting inside the tool. So when that loads, and that's a standard JSON document that you saw before. A nice thing to actually note, you'll see what I kind of do. You'll notice I put a version stamp actually on each of my JSON entities because I know I'm going to iteratively change it over time to market. So think about that. That's one way to do it. So that's if you're lifting from JSON files, which I should point out with SQL 2016, you are getting JSON support, so you could do it that way. The other way, though, is going from SQL. So I'll show you going from SQL. So if I change this one to SQL, I put in my connection string. So I'll point to localhost. I go initial catalog equals for docdb. Then I'll go colon, and I go user ID equals SA test, I think it was. And then a password that no one's going to remember, right? Because it's ultra secretive. And then I'll just go select from, I don't remember what it's called. could be venue listing. It'll remember it. Change this one to venue ID. Let's see if that works. Yeah, it worked. Okay. And then that's brought across. So now if I go into the document database again, you should see the two when it loads. Or not. Try again. The only thing I should say, so the only thing to be careful of, I noticed last night when I was doing it, that if you don't, it is caps lock sensitive. So if you don't actually put it, what? Good pickup. So because it's JSON, it lets you actually do that. So where am I going? This, yeah, good pickup. Thank you, magical people from the audience. And then that should show afterwards. Hey, there we go. And then that's come through across there. What you will notice as well now, so because I did that, if I go into the Document Explorer, just so you guys know, Document Explorer. Yes, there are ones with these three, so which are different. So inside a collection, you can have multiple different entities inside there. They can look different. It is called Schema Flexible. So and I should say, and when I say Schema Flexible as opposed to Schema Free. So it is designed so that you can change it over time. I will show you. So that's kind of importing if you need to get data into the tool. The other part is how you program against it. The first thing I'll point out when you go start using DocumentDB, do go to the DocumentDB documentation. If you go to the documentation and then you go to get started and then learning path. So I don't know how many people have seen these, but I'll zoom in. I'll zoom in because I can hear the person. I don't have any see this before. So for each of the services, what happens is the teams will make learning paths where you can go and click and interactively go through them. So they are screenshotted tutorials that you can go through and learn how to use the different tools. So go have a look at DocumentDBs for that one.
Can you go back and show us what the records look like in that menu DB?
Oh, yeah, I can. Yeah, hang on. There you go. So that's what it looked like. You'll notice actually one thing. So you'll notice that the tool, actually what it does do, for each, if there's not an ID field, it will actually add the ID field itself, and that's what that ugly GUI is there. You'll also notice that as well, so what DocumentDB does, it does do automatic indexing for you, and it does that online and in real time as well for you as you add documents so that it's always up to date. I should say you can add your own indexes as well, but it handles that for you. So that's the learning path. Next, what we'll do is we'll jump inside of Visual Studio. Everyone's using 2015? Yes? No? Some organizations are still forcing you to use. And I'll go and I'll open this one because I don't trust myself with a memory. When I open up this one, there are four SDKs at the moment. So there is a Java SDK, there is a .NET SDK, there is a Node.js SDK, and I think, I've forgotten what the last one is. Go have a look though. So the first thing I want to go through, I'll minimize that. The first thing I'll go through is how we talk to it from a client perspective. So something that tripped me up, you'll notice I said Node.js, I didn't actually say JavaScript. So there is a JavaScript client SDK, and you can find it by go Azure, document, DB, JavaScript, what's that, SDK? This one? You can find it there, so that's the actual JavaScript file that you would import into a JavaScript. JavaScript application. Something that does trip people up that you will notice here, it's got this little message here which says, note the JavaScript client SDK is intended for mobile scenarios. You'll run into cause issues when attempting to use it from a browser. So cause, for anyone who doesn't, it stands for, what does it stand for? Cross-origin, that's what. Yeah, cross-origin. So you'll run into that. So don't think of using this from. If you use it from a web application, it probably is best to have something like Node.js or MVC actually inside there to do all of the, so you can use those SDKs. What I will show you, so if you do want to do it that way, what you need to do is, what you will need to do regardless for the JavaScript SDK is... get what we call a response token. So this first piece of script here, what it does is, so you notice here I've got my endpoint URL which points to the document, the database location. You'll notice next I've got the authorization key sitting down here. You'll notice here that this is a .NET version. So actually for the .NET version I'll show you. So if you go Matt here, you go manage NuGet packages. Not going to explain what NuGet is. You manage NuGet, if you search for document DB, you'll see it come up there, and that's the one to use. When you go ahead and create what we call a document client, point it towards your endpoint URL and the authorization key that you get from the portal. Here, for the client, what you need to do is you need to get a response token, and the way we do that is we create a user first, so a user to actually access document DB. Then what you'll do is you delegate permissions to that user. So here's the delegating to the permissions to the user. So some permissions, I'm giving it read permissions, and I'm telling it which collection to go look at. When you start using the SDK, what you'll be doing is using what we call links. So links look like this above. So this is a link here. It's pretty easy to follow. So if you see there, it says, so it's DBS, so that's your databases. Then backslash, then your database name, then backslash cols, which stands for collections, and then backslash the collection name. So in my case, it was concerts that we were doing before. So we're giving read access to that concerts collection that we had before. Once you do all of that, that'll come back and that will return a response. What I will do, this is the one, this is the connection, the actual link for a user. I should say what you will see is you'll see talk, if you look at the online docs, there may be talk of a thing called a self-link, and it looks quite ugly. Doesn't look as nice as that. So before the actual, so you know how I showed you the GUI, the internal, there's actually GUIDs for the collections themselves. Before a couple of months ago, you had to, instead of putting concert watcher, the plain text there, you had to put that that one. So if I'll show you what it looks like as I'm talking and no one. This thing, the resource ID, that's what I meant. So you had to put the resource ID instead of the actual resource name itself. So you can put the resource name today, don't worry. So it's a lot easier to do that. Once you've done that, I'll try and run it and we'll see. Inserts, da-da-da. Play. Doesn't fall over. Hey, F10. And then I scroll over. You know, so it returns HTTP response with this thing called a token here. So that is the big response token that you will need to supply as in your authorization header on the JavaScript side so that a client can access it. That response token as well, it is set to expire as well. So it will expire over time. And that's just to know that on the JavaScript side, you will need that for accessing it. For Node.js and all of them, you don't. What you can actually do with Node.js and .NET is you can use your authorization and your the endpoint URL. The reason, if you want to know why they did that, is because they don't want you putting your they don't want you putting the authorization key and the endpoint URL into client-sided JavaScript, because that's a bit of a security exploit. Once you've done that, you've got that permission back, and you can go ahead and use that. On the .NET side, I'll show you how to query it. So down below here is how we query it. You'll notice here that what I'm doing is I'm creating what we call a document query, and like before, I'm going through to the documents inside the collection. So DBS/ConcertWatcher, which is the database name, /Coles/venues for those venues, and then /docs for the documents which sit inside all of those venues. When I'm doing that, I'm going ahead and So this is modifying for that one. What I'm doing, I'm using that to actually get the link to the document. And then I'm going ahead and actually getting the venue itself and typecasting it. So if I go here, I'll show you. Oh, that might fall over. Give me a second. Let me comment out. Control KC. Play. There we go. So you notice that one actually returns the document. So here, what you expected to see inside the profile. You'll notice there's the self link itself. So that's the actual link, and that's the ugly piece of text that I was talking about before. That's the self link there. I've gone ahead and I've also pulled down the document as well and casted it to a venue there. So the way you do that is by supplying the generic parameter on the right-hand side to create document query. That will then encode it back down to that venue. So then we've got it as a venue. From there, I've gone ahead and I'm changing the version stamp to V2. But you'll also notice I'm adding this location field to it. And the location field says that it's a point and its coordinates, it's longitude and latitude 100, 100, which is wrong, but for all purposes, that's what it is. What I'm doing there is I'm adding a location to the venue. So where this is leading into, if we go this, you know, go there, that should be replaced now. If I swap across to the portal, and I'll go to ConcertWatcher. No, I won't. I'll go to document. Don't know how many times. You can see the requests is going up. I'll wait. The other kind of nuance as well is wait for it to load because I noticed it then switches. We edited that one, and you can see it there now. So that's how you replace and edit documents inside DocumentDB. I should say, so there's the portal itself. There's also another one called DocumentDB Studio. Go have a look for it that you can use for manually uploading documents as well. And that's a client application, very similar to the migration tool. Once that's added, you can then use it. I'll show you the... So that was that. For writing a query, it's from memory, it's create document... collection query. No, it's not. I will show you in the browser how to write queries. If you go to Query Explorer here, it's going to bring up this. The first thing you're going to notice when you look at it is, so I'm choosing the database and the collections there, so the concert collection. If I do that select from C, Eunice, it comes back with all of them. If I wanted to only get the concert's name, I would go c.name, run the query, and then that only gives me back the query names. So exactly like you would expect from a SQL interface. Now, the other thing is the great thing that the DocumentDB team have done, if you don't have a DocumentDB database yourself, they've set up what we call an Azure DocumentDB query playground, where you can play with a whole bunch of queries. So to find it, Azure DocumentDB query playground. You'll notice it's here. On Bing, it comes back as number one. Not sure about Google. You'll see there, so this is the query playground. There are a couple of tabs up here in terms of teaching you how to do different things. So there's syntax here, which goes through the syntax. If you go ahead and run it, it'll come back. You can also have a look at the sample docs that are being supplied to it. So for that, that's what this is, looks like. So it's a whole bunch of things. If I go, and I can show you, if I go and take out, say, tags, so you can see it there, run it, you notice it doesn't come back with the tags anymore. So nice and simple. The other one, the other area is filtering as well. So that's what filtering looks like. So very much what you'd expect. So select from food, where the food.manufacturer name equals the Coca-Cola company, and the food version is greater than zero. So running that, that comes back. Other ones, if you need to do ins and betweens, so range queries, it supports doing that as well. So if I run that one, that comes back. You see a sample docs here for it. The last one is the order by syntax as well. So select food.description, food.food group, and the order by on the end there. It's all there for you to play with. I should say there's more, actually. There's a little arrow here. So projection, joining. So joining different ones. Built-in, so you've got a whole bunch of built-in functions as well, like isDefined. So isDefined is actually a really useful one. So you'll notice when I'm going through, I'm actually, I'm kind of iteratively changing what the JSON document is. So therefore, there's going to be a point in time where you need to check if that property is available on that document. And that's what isDefined is used for. You'll see there, so food group in that, if I run that, run, took a bit longer, but it comes back. UDFs as well. So you can write your own user-defined functions. You can write stored procs as well. I don't have a demo for stored procs. Come find me later. I'll be at the data den if you want to find me to ask. That's all of them. What's new, though, is actually were geospatial capabilities inside of DocumentDB. So I got really excited when I saw this one. So DocumentDB does actually now support doing geospatial queries, and you'll notice that's why I attached a point to the venue data set. It looks like that. So you notice here what they're doing is they're trying to find all the volcanoes which had the last known eruption in between 1800 and 1899 within that radius that you see there. So it's that distance. If I run that, then it finds it. So you can bring geospatial capabilities to your DocumentDB environments now. And then that's the query playground. So I'd advise if you want to start playing around with it and going through all the queries, go to the playground and start playing with it there. What you'll learn very fast is that it is very similar to SQL. So if you come from a background where you know how to write SQL, you will know how to query DocumentDB. The only part is that you do need to know the development side to do the other part. So that's all of that. I think that was all for the demo portion. I'm going to swap across to slides and back now. And we're going to go through the different areas. Fine, if that works. Cool. Okay. So that was all. That was a bit of a demo of Document DB. I wanted to do an HTML5 app with you, but I didn't get a chance to code it before this. The first thing that we'll talk about. So when you're theme out Document DB, I referred to it earlier. Consistency levels. So when you're querying, you have the choice of setting your different consistency levels. So this is kind of interesting because if you think about NoSQL, the thing with it is that unlike SQL, you don't have a guaranteed promise. It's not like you have a commit and a fallback or a rollback. You don't have that with a NoSQL solution. I should say with Document DB, you do have commit and rollback inside the stored procedures, so you can use all of them. The other nice is you can toggle this kind of consistency level. So although you're not given that guarantee in most circumstances, you can toggle the consistency level. So you've got a choice between four, strong, session, bounded, and eventual. The key thing to note is that the choice of your consistency level is going to heavily impact what the performance of your application is. And do take that into account. I'll go to the next. So four consistency levels. So strong, session, bounded state staleness, and eventual. So going up to going from the top. So the strong is that it's been committed to the majority of the quorum of replicas. So inside Document DB, we do have several. The way the service works, to give you the scalability and performance, you are guaranteed that we do replication across several nodes. The nice thing is, well, actually, I should say, with Document, whilst I'm, it's on top of my head, Document DB is priced a bit differently to other services. So if you're looking at Document DB in terms of pricing, do take a look at it. The way you are charged is based on guaranteed throughput. So by subscribing to an S2 instance, you're guaranteed a certain level of throughput performance for the service. So key thing that you'll notice there, I'm not saying that you're paying for storage, because you're not paying for storage. You're actually paying just for the performance. And then there's a cap on storage levels, which are on there. Going through all of them, so those are the different four levels. Eventual is the weakest form. That'll give you the highest level of performance. But the thing is, do note that older ones could be returned. So in some circumstances, that is okay. When I did point out all of those ones before, I tell you, so Halo 5, they use it for the context of different users and their profiles and all of that. So it's not the mission-critical bills and payments and all of that. That does need to come back, certain instantaneous. But there, I'm trying to think, not in their one. But I do know the recommendation game is one where you could have it late. The next area is indexing. Oh, that's down at the document level. So that's down all the way at the document level. And that's a good point. Yep. So it's all the way down at the document level. The next area is indexing. So by default, Document DB does automatic indexing across the schema that you upload. They do let you write your own indexes as well. The nice thing to note, so they're highly concurrent. The service has been designed so that it is truly parallel. You can chuck as many queries at you as you want at it. It's designed for what we say big data solutions. Optimized for SSD, lock-free, so there are no locks inside Document DB. It's not like SQL. And it was developed with Microsoft Research. For indexing, two things you want to think about. So you have two modes. And then you have policies which you can set. So, and there's code snippets on the right. So for indexing modes, you've got two modes for consistency. You've got the default mode, and then you've got the index updated synchronously on write. So every time you do a write, synchronously update the index. The other option is for the default mode, that's the automatic indexing mode. Indexing policies, you've got automatic, and then manual, you can choose to index certain documents versus not other ones as well. So you do have that granular level of ability. The next one for indexes is range support. So it's supported for numbers today. I'll double check that. Optimized for comparison queries. String position, so default is 3. Numeric position, default is 3. You can change them. The other one, that's a useful tip there. So that I didn't show today. Currently today, what is a bit frustrating is the lack of date time support inside of DocumentDB. So when you're playing with it, do actually take a look at that and think about how you're going to approach that. So that's why it says time from epoch, because most of the time people use an integer timestamp to represent the date. Because then you know you can order based on that integer timestamp as well. Yeah. Next one, so you've got indexing paths, so that's going back to doing that manual, so you can include it or exclude it, and then index types. So it's a hash, and it's supported for strings and numbers and optimized for equality matches. Now, the thing is, once you actually combine these two, this is where it kind of makes an impact on what the performance of your application is going to be. If you go and say choose strong and then lazy for the indexing mode, it's actually going to come back and you're going to get an eventual. You'll notice that all of those boxes up the top are eventual. So you can pretty much point there that if you choose lazy on your indexing mode, it's going to come back as eventual. If you choose consistent, it's going to come back with either strong, the bounded staleness, the session, or the eventual. So do have a look at that. I'm sure they're going to share my slides as well after. So querying tips. Consider your query needs and your index policies. The policies are immutable for now. The other thing is avoid scans. DocumentDB... is a lot better if you have the indexes and you're using the IDs as opposed to doing a whole table scan. Pre-aggregate where possible as well. Next one. A service summary. We say it's unique among NoSQL stores, and it is. The thing I like to point out, so it is a PaaS-based service. The areas where it differs with, say, MongoDB, So DocumentDB has been out in the wild for about a year and a half now, so it is quite a mature service. There's quite a few people working on it. There are a whole bunch of Channel 9 MSDN videos as well. If the one to watch is a guy by the name of Ryan Craw, you'll see he's the main kind of one for DocumentDB. I tried to get him to come down to Australia, but he was too busy at the time, unfortunately. So go and have a look at them. They're really good. With MongoDB, the thing I try and talk to customers about, for a lot of customers, when they're starting the MongoDB, they do it on-premise a lot of the time. But if you think of the way NoSQL actually scales, it's not about scaling up with NoSQL. It's about scaling outwards and scaling across multiple nodes. In this situation, it lends itself to a cloud-based solution most of the time, as opposed to an on-prem solution, because we can do the scale-out code across scale-out across multiple nodes. I should say as well, if you've got any SQL developers who are trying to move you across to NoSQL, or you are yourself, do have a think. So there's going to be times when NoSQL is relevant, where SQL is going to be relevant. There's going to be times when other technologies like Redis Cache are also relevant as well. So that's another one. Just going over those. So developed for the cloud and delivered as a service. It's queryable, you saw, so it's SQL at the front end. It does have some transactional transactional processing through JavaScript, so writing your different stored procedures. Predictable performance, where you should consider DocumentDB. So if you're building any new web applications and mobile, new web and mobile cloud-based applications, I will say for the majority of DocumentDB discussions I've had, they have been greenfield projects that are being done, so new projects inside of the company. Rapid development and high, so you'll see there, so I was able to flexibly change things very fast, so if you need to have that rapidly evolving environment. Some other areas that people use, some people use it to store, say, tweets as well from Twitter. So if you've got anything which is JSON and you need to store that, that's what you can use DocumentDB for. Query and KB stores. And anyone running a document store in a VM who's looking for a managed service. And that's just talking back to the fact that at the end of the day, you don't really want to be managing the different clusters. We do all that for you. And you get the nice total requests on all of that different level. And we also give you the guaranteed SLA performance. And with that, that's all I had planned for. So I'm going to give you an early mark. That's DocumentDB. I'll hang around. I'm here. The other place I'll be on the showcase floor over at the Data Den. So I know some people have come by and had a go. There's two lab guides there that you can go through. Unfortunately, nothing on DocumentDB, but there's one on machine learning and Power BI. And with that, I'll let you all go. Have a good day.